Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. There's big news in Boulevard. Soitec Solar, in a surprising announcement, has informed the county that it is withdrawing one of its two controversial industrial solar projects in Boulevard. We'll have details on why in our Green Scene report. California's Supreme Court has ruled that restrictions on housing for paroled sex offenders violated the state's constitution. The case was filed by San Diego's public defenders. Find out why and how that may impact our region on today's show. The storm that hit our region has given us a thorough soaking and brought snow to our mountains in East County. Just how much snow fell? We'll have the tales shortly. And if you're heading to the beach now that the sun is shining again, be sure to listen up, since we'll be telling you about some local beaches that are closed due to sewage runoff. On our Capitol report, hear why former Secretary of State and presidential contender Hillary Clinton's use of private emails for official business is stirring up controversy and could violate the Federal Records Act. We'll have news about a new bill introduced by San Diego Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez that would require utility companies to justify executive bonuses in a public hearing before the Public Utilities Commission if that company has had federal safety violations that cost ratepayers $5 million or more. And then on Crime Beat, hear about the shooting of a motorist on an I-8 on-ramp in El Cajon and about a domestic violence suspect who crashed head-on into a sheriff's deputy's car. We'll tell you about a local fire board that's opened up its finance committee to the press and public as the result of an East County Magazine inquiry following questions raised by the state over the district's finances. We'll also have news about some ancient treasures that were found in San Diego by Homeland Security and have since been returned to their rightful owners. On the education front, we'll have the latest court action regarding the Grossmont Union High School District and the controversy involving funding of a high school for Alpine. And speaking of Alpine, there's a new photo exhibit at the Alpine Wall of Honor this week titled Remembering Our Fallen. It honors local veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we'll have the tales on this special display. Weather has led to a search being called off for a hiker who's been missing for 2 weeks, but new clues were found this past weekend, and we'll tell you about that on today's show. And speaking of hiking, we'll tell you about a new trail that the Forest Service is proposing to Three Sisters Falls. We'll also have news about a fire extinguisher recall and the latest statistics on whooping cough in San Diego County. Wildflower season has begun in the Anza Borrego Desert, and we'll have tips for you today on where to view these beautiful blooms if you're heading out east. And then on Destination East County, we'll tell you about some festive events coming up across East County this month, from St. Patrick's Day festivities to Easter egg hunts, a music festival, and more. Today we'll also be replaying a couple of Best of East County segments that are favorites of ours, including a Vines and Wines interview with the owners of the Ramona Ranch Winery, as well as an Animal Tales segment on the founder of the Cheetah Conservation Fund during her recent visit to East County. Plus, we'll replay our bookshelf interview with Kirkley Adler, author of Child of the Storm, celebrating the life of local surfer Chris O'Rourke. And if you're looking for a bargain on a house or some other property, we'll tell you about a county auction of properties that's coming up later this month. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, because East County matters.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. After winning approval of supervisors for two controversial industrial-scale solar projects in Boulevard, Soitec Solar, in a surprise announcement Tuesday, advised county officials that it has withdrawn one of them. Soitec project manager Patrick Brown says that Soitec is exiting the solar business and has been unable to find a buyer for its Tierra del Sol project. Though the company is still continuing its efforts to complete the Rugged Solar Project at the gateway to McCain Valley and Federal Wilderness areas. In a letter sent March 2nd to Supervisors Vice Chairman Ron Roberts, Brown wrote that Soytec has canceled the land options for the site, adding, the project has been officially terminated. Donna Tisdale, chair of the Boulevard Planning Group and founder of Backcountry Against Dumps, a citizens group suing to halt these projects, called the withdrawal of the Tierra del Sol project good news and adds that she remains hopeful that the Rugged Solar project may ultimately also be canceled. The projects have drawn community opposition over concerns about destroying views and wildlife habitat on over 1,100 acres, as well as over fire dangers posed by electrical equipment and the massive amounts of groundwater slated to be used for their construction.
California's Supreme Court has invalidated a portion of Jessica's Law, tossing out restrictions that it deemed unconstitutional that prevented sex offenders from living within 2,000 feet of schools, parks, or other places with children. The High Court ruled in favor of the San Diego Public Defender's Office, which had challenged the law, arguing that it was too restrictive and resulted in some paroled sex offenders winding up homeless, living on the streets, in vehicles, or camping along rivers. Over one-third of the county's 482 paroled registered sex offenders were homeless, prohibited by the law from living in 97% of the rental housing countywide. Justice Marvin Baxter wrote the opinion, finding that the residency restrictions have increased homelessness and hindered the parolees' access to medical treatment, drug and alcohol services, psychological counseling, and other rehabilitative services. San Diego's public defenders had argued that local law enforcement was too stringent, applying the housing limits even to sex offenders whose crimes did not involve children and those whose offenses were more than 30 years ago. Those rulings have kept some offenders from returning to their own homes or to drug rehab programs located too close to parks or schools. The ruling's impact will be felt in East County's rural areas, where residents have complained that communities such as Jacumba, Campo, Boulevard, and Borrego have been used as dumping grounds for sexually violent predators. Whether the law will result in more or fewer predators released into rural areas remains to be seen. Jessica's Law was named after a Florida child, 9-year-old Jessica Lunsford, who was kidnapped and murdered. The Supreme Court ruling left intact other provisions of the law, such as stricter penalties for repeat sexual offenders, an expanded definition of the term sexually violent predator, and making it a felony for paroled sex offenders to possess child pornography. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez has introduced legislation that would require public utilities to justify executive bonus compensation at a public hearing of the California Public Utilities Commission. The law kicks in whenever a federal safety violation costs ratepayers $5 million or more. To date, the CPUC has never conducted a public review of bonuses for utility executives to determine if the compensation was justified, even in the light of major safety violations that led to the $3.3 billion cost absorbed by ratepayers when the San Onofre nuclear power plant was shuttered, or after the 2010 San Bruno pipeline explosion in Northern California. Gonzalez's announcement comes in the wake of increased state scrutiny of Southern California Edison's practice of doling out million-dollar bonuses to the utility executives while the company grappled with tremendous costs related to the permanent shutdown of its San Onofre nuclear power plant. Earlier this week, California State Controller Betty Yee sent a letter to Edison International requesting justification for the spike in compensation enjoyed by top executives while ratepayers and stockholders alike are absorbing huge costs due to mismanagement. The closure of the San Onofre nuclear generating station was found by the Federal Energy Information Administration to be a major factor in the 59% increase in wholesale electricity prices for California that occurred right after the power plant shutdown in 2012. San Onofre, which was operated by Southern California Edison, was responsible for providing power throughout San Diego County and Southern California. Under Assemblywoman Gonzalez's bill, AB 1266, a utility such as Southern California Edison would be subject to the CPUC's Tier 3 review process, which requires the commission to open a proceeding and hold at least one public hearing to review the proposed compensation. The CPUC would be required to determine what portion of the executive bonus, if any, the ratepayers should absorb. Gonzalez noted that neither shareholders or ratepayers played any role in the mismanagement or the management missteps that led to the multi-billion-dollar disaster that the San Onofre shutdown has become. She adds, to reward top executives for successfully passing the buck to everyday ratepayers and stockholders who are trying to hold a secure retirement is inexplicable to me and should face public scrutiny. The San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station went offline in 2012 after radiation leaks from faulty parts and the decommissioning process, which resulted in $1.4 billion hit to stockholders and an additional $3.3 billion being passed on to ratepayers. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
A panel of three appellate court justices has denied a request by the Grossmont Union High School District, which had asked the justices to issue a stay halting an injunction ordered by Superior Court Judge Joel Pressman. Judge Pressman had ordered the district to set aside $42 million of bond monies to be used for building a high school in Alpine. The Court of Appeals will ultimately hear Grossmont's arguments against the injunction on spending those bond funds, but the district must set aside the money in the meantime. This ruling came after Alpine taxpayers filed suit to protect bond funds approved by taxpayers for projects including an Alpine high school, since some funds have been spent by the district on projects that were not listed in the bond. The district has argued that setting aside the funds would mean delays and improvements at other schools, including some safety-related issues. But Alpine parents have argued that building the high school is a safety issue for their community, since several Alpine students have died commuting long distances to attend school or extracurricular activities. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A storm that swept into our region over the weekend dropped over 8 inches of snow on Mount Laguna and more than a foot on Palomar Mountain. The region also received much-needed heavy rains with more than 2 inches at Descanso, Julian, and Lake Cuyamaca by late Monday. At the Department of Motor Vehicles in El Cajon, hailstones blanketed the parking lot. That caused headaches for motorists, with 265 crashes reported countywide during the first 18 hours Monday, the CHP reports. Expect warmer temperatures and sunny skies later this week, the National Weather Service forecasts. The County Water Authority reminds residents to turn off sprinklers to help save water after the rains. On Monday, the state's Department of Water Resources announced it will increase water deliveries to customers statewide, thanks to recent storms that have soaked the state. But wholesale agencies will still receive only 20% of normal allocations, up from 15% that had been announced, UT San Diego reports. Snowpacks in the Sierras remain at only 19% of normal. However, in this fourth consecutive year of drought, shortfalls of water are apt to continue this summer unless more heavy storms occur. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Storm runoff contaminated with sewage in the Tijuana River estuary has led to the closure of beaches in the southern portion of San Diego County. The county's Department of Environmental Health has shut down Silver Strand State Beach on Coronado and coastal areas south to Imperial Beach and the Tijuana Slough National Wildlife Refuge as the contaminated flow from the Tijuana River mouth moves northward. Signs warning of sewage-contaminated water will remain in place until field measurements indicate that the ocean water is safe for recreational use. For updates on beach closure information, you can visit www.sdbeachinfo.com or call the 24-hour hotline at 619-338-2073. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Ed Barrena with the Capitol Report. A controversy has arisen involving Hillary Rodham Clinton following revelations that while serving as Secretary of State, she did not have an official government email address and used only a personal email address for all of her official government business. Clinton, the former First Lady, is considered a frontrunner for the Democratic presidential nomination. The issue of private emails for public business has been controversial, occurring not only in Washington, D.C., but in California, too, where a court held that only those private emails relevant to official business must be disclosed as public records, not all emails sent through a public official's private account. But federal law, unlike state law, requires that all federal officials' records be preserved for posterity and be accessible by historians, the media, and congressional committees indefinitely, with exceptions for sensitive, classified material. Yet Clinton's aides reportedly took no action to have her email communications preserved on government computer servers. That may violate the Federal Records Act, the New York Times reports. Jason Barron, a lawyer and former director of litigation at the National Archives and Records Administration, says it is, quote, difficult to conceive of a scenario short of nuclear winter where an agency would be justified in allowing its cabinet-level head officer to solely use a private email communications channel for the conduct of government business, unquote. A Clinton aide has insisted that Mrs. Clinton did comply with the letter and spirit of the rules. Her staff has pored through voluminous emails and did turn over 55,000 pages after the State Department requested her emails. Hundreds of pages on the Benghazi controversy have been released, but it is unclear how many documents were withheld. It's not illegal for a federal official to conduct government business through a private email account. However, copies of all official emails should be sent to an official account to become part of the permanent federal archive. That was not done with Clinton's emails, and it is unclear whether some may have been destroyed or lost. Some government officials, including former Secretary of State Colin Powell, have used personal emails for certain communications, but Clinton's successor, Secretary of State John Kerry, keeps all of his email records stored on an official government server. So does President Obama, who emails only from a secure government account. For the future, a new bill signed into law by President Barack Obama in November requires that all official messages sent via a personal email account must be copied or forwarded to an official account within 20 days. The new law requires disciplinary action for failing to archive records, but it does not apply retroactively. The failure of Clinton's staff to make her emails part of the official State Department records until recently, and then only with a portion of her correspondence, means that some of these records may not have been turned over in response to Freedom of Information Act requests, subpoenas, or other document searches, Politico reports. Whether or not these actions are found to violate the Federal Records Act for preserving documents, the law that was in place during Clinton's tenure lacked enforcement teeth. But the lack of transparency will likely be an issue raised by Clinton's opponents on the upcoming presidential campaign trail.
The San Diego Sheriff's Office has called off a search for Chris Sylvia, a hiker who has been missing for over 2 weeks. Sheriff spokesman Jan Caldwell told CBS News Tuesday that weather has made a productive search impossible, adding, "This does not mean the investigation is over. We are still running any leads that come into us." The young hiker left Anza for a solo hike to Campo along the Pacific Crest Trail. He was last heard from on February 16th when he called a friend, but failed to meet up with his friend the next day to pick up new supplies as planned at the Lu Quan Meditation Center near Warner Springs. Some of his belongings and ID were found last week near Warner Springs along Chihuahua Valley Road. And then on Sunday, additional items that may belong to him were found near Tule Spring, 6 miles north of the search area in Chihuahua Valley. A hiker reportedly found hiking sandals and an empty package of freeze-dried stew. Sylvia's mother told CBS Channel 8 News that her son had recently broken up with his girlfriend, but that she did not believe he was suicidal. He was an experienced hiker, she said, but added that he normally did not hike alone. The sheriff's office has indicated that the disappearance of Chris Sylvia will be referred to the homicide department to continue the investigation, a step that is actually routine in missing persons cases to assure that all possibilities are investigated. Anyone with news about Sylvia or his disappearance is asked to please contact the sheriff's office. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with Crime Beat Report. Eddie Martin, a 41-year-old suspect who was wanted for a domestic violence incident, is under arrest after he fled from officers and crashed headfirst into a sheriff's deputy's patrol car in Santee on Saturday night. The story began Saturday morning when deputies responded to a domestic violence call at the suspect's home on Mass Boulevard. His wife told deputies that during a dispute in which he allegedly committed felony domestic violence, Martin told his wife he was willing to engage in gun battle with police enforcement if they contacted him. He fled before deputies arrived, but returned in the evening shortly after 7 p.m. His wife again called for help and reported that he was banging on the front door, but once again, Martin left before deputies reached the scene, said Sheriff Tom Seaver. Deputies searched the area for Martin and soon spotted him driving his Chevy Tahoe east on Mass Boulevard in Santee. When deputies tried to pull him over, he refused to yield and instead drove in the wrong direction, heading westbound in the eastbound lanes until he collided head-on with the responding deputy's patrol car. The deputy was taken to a hospital and was treated for minor injuries. His patrol car sustained major front-end damage. Martin was arrested and a stolen handgun was found in his vehicle. He was taken to a hospital, treated for minor injuries, then booked into central jail for felony domestic violence, evading arrest, possession of a stolen handgun, causing injury while driving under the influence, and other charges.
This is Ed Barena with news about a shooting that occurred on an on-ramp to Interstate 8 in El Cajon shortly after 3:30 in the morning on Monday. According to the California Highway Patrol, two Hispanic men in their 20s driving a dark Toyota Tercel followed a couple in a pickup truck, then pulled up alongside the truck and opened fire on the West Main Street on-ramp. The 50-year-old driver of the pickup truck and his passenger, a 45-year-old woman from Lemon Grove, were seen earlier in the evening at the Sequan Casino talking with the men who later followed them. The driver of the pickup was struck by a bullet in his shoulder and another round lodged in his vehicle. The Toyota Tercel sped off after the shooting, and the victim drove his vehicle to Grossmont Hospital in La Mesa. He has since been transferred to Sharp Memorial Hospital in San Diego. The female passenger was not injured. The freeway was shut down for 20 minutes while officers looked for further evidence. This investigation is ongoing, and anyone with information is asked to contact the CHP El Cajon office at 619-401-2000.
As a result of an East County Magazine inquiry, the San Miguel Fire District's board has voted to make its finance committee a permanent standing committee. That means that the committee's meetings will now be open to the press and the public. Previously, the finance committee was deemed an ad hoc committee by the district, which argued that it did not need to allow public access or even provide minutes of what transpired or agendas. East County Magazine contacted Californians Aware, or CalAware, an organization that protects public access under California's Sunshine Laws. CalAware General Counsel Terry Frank advised us that the Finance Committee could be construed as a standing committee subject to the Ralph M. Brown Open Government Act after he reviewed district records on the committee's creation. While the board disputed that it should be required to open records of prior meetings, after an East County Magazine request to open future meetings to the public, the board voted to make the committee a permanent standing committee and do just that. Now, here's what fired us up to believe the public should have a right to know what's happening in the San Miguel Fire Board's financial committee meetings. As we reported earlier, a state investigation of the district's finances found major discrepancies. The state controller's report indicated that California launched its investigation because the district understated revenues in fiscal year 2010-2011 by over $500,000 and by more than $2 million in the next fiscal year. In addition, the state contended that expenditures were overstated by $827,000 and $987,000 during those 2 years, plus grant revenues were overstated by more than $1.8 million in fiscal year 2011-2012 alone. San Miguel later formed a partnership with CAL FIRE to handle its firefighting services for the district. We asked CAL FIRE Public Information Officer Kendall Bortissier for an explanation regarding the differences in the reporting of revenues. He says the numbers used in the state controller's office report were unaudited numbers that did not reflect findings of the independent audit completed about 6 months later. He said, "The actual independent audit is the official reporting of the district's financial position." But the district still has not provided details as to exactly why it was off by hundreds of thousands of dollars, or in one case, over $2 million in its initial report. Now, the state found no evidence of actual wrongdoing, but because there were grounds for an investigation, and because the district missed a deadline to provide follow-up information, the district's hefty bookkeeping discrepancies will cost taxpayers, who must now foot the bill for the full expenses of the state's investigation. East County Magazine has asked the district to disclose what the cost of that state investigation to taxpayers will be, and we will publish that information once we receive it. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Remembering our fallen, memorial photo exhibit honoring 710 Californians killed in the War on Terror in Iraq and Afghanistan, including 77 local residents, is on display this week at the Alpine Wall of Honor. The exhibit is adjacent to the Alpine Community Center. It is open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. now through March 7th. The Alpine Wall of Honor arose from Vietnam veteran Dan Foster's idea to say thank you and honor local veterans. It started with a plaque on a rock in 2009 and today has tiles of over 500 veterans who have served or are still serving in our nation's armed forces. The wall has gained national attention due to the recognition by the Ford Good Works Program, which spent 3 days in Alpine filming a feature that aired on CBS sports stations internationally and is accessible on YouTube. A ceremony to say thank you is held every time there's a new row of tiles added. This exhibit and 13 other state exhibits have been created by Patriotic Productions, a nonprofit organization in Nebraska to honor veterans since the 9/11 terror attacks. Their goal is to complete an exhibit for every state. For more information, you can visit rememberingourfallen.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Wildflower season has begun in the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, where annual flowers, including purple phacelia and yellow desert dandelions, are blooming at the park's visitor center. The Anza Borrego Foundation offers these tips for where you can view flowers currently. In Borrego Palm Canyon, shrubs such as brittlebrush, chuparosa, and desert lavender are making a beautiful showing, especially in western canyons. Brown-eyed evening primrose and sand verbena can be found in the fields along DeGiorgio Road and alongside many of the roads throughout the Borrego Valley. A drive to the end of the pavement at the north end of DeGiorgio Road yields a variety of annuals, including spectacle pod, brown-eyed evening primrose, sand verbena, and desert dandelion, sunflowers, and even a few desert lilies coming into bloom. Purple lupine plants are widespread throughout the park, visible along the highways. Sunflower plants as well as dune primrose plants are present in fields north of Henderson Canyon Road, an area aptly known as the Flower Fields. Desert lilies are also blooming among a variety of annual plants along Henderson Canyon Road, just east of the intersection with Highway S2. Daytime temperatures can be very warm in the desert, but mornings are ideal for hiking, exploring, and, of course, wildflower watching. For updates, you can join the Anza Borrego Foundation's email list at theabf.org, or you can call the State Park Wildflower Hotline at 760-767-4684. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
Today we're going to introduce you to Terry and Michael, and they are the owners of the Ramona Ranch Winery. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Tell me a little bit about yourselves.
Well, Mike and I are both from a small town on the Oregon coast. Ramona appealed to us because of its rural nature, open spaces, and the opportunity to have horses and farm, all of which we're lucky to do.
Well, it's beautiful up here, I can tell you that much. How did you guys actually get started?
Well, we moved up to Ramona in 2004, and in 2005 we saw an invitation to attend a meeting of the Ramona Valley Vineyard Association. These meetings were held in people's homes, and we went, met a great group of people, and decided that it seemed like something we were interested in. We were invited to come and help out at harvest, and we were hooked.
Nice. And you started making your first wines that year? How did that work?
Well, we were paid for our labor, so to say, with 100 pounds of Syrah grapes. And we made our first batch of wine that year in 06. And then we installed our first vineyard later that year and have been just growing each year, getting a little more and more entrenched into the wine business.
More and more.
And Michael, you have your own vineyard installation business now. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. I started that recently, and I'm just trying to grow the region, the Ramona Valley area, and got a lot of people interested in planting grapes and just want to grow the region to make some great wine.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful growing environment up here. I understand that the Ramona Valley has its own AVA, which for our fans and listeners means American Viticulture Area. What's so special about Ramona?
Well, Ramona is unique, and I think when people drive up the hill to Ramona, they're surprised by the rocky outscapes. Mm-hmm. It almost looks like we're on another planet, and some people have told me it looks like the south of France. So It's ideal for growing grapes. Grapes were grown in San Diego County before Prohibition. It was a huge grape area. And grapes like the same things we do. They like hot days, cool evenings, a little breeze. So you add in Ramona's rocky soil, our south-facing slopes, and you have perfect growing conditions, which made us unique and recognized as an AVA.
I also understand that Ramona Ranch is also the co-owners of one of my favorite new little magazines, the Ramona Valley Wine Region magazine. When did this get launched?
That got launched like many great things. Sitting around the table one Friday evening with a bunch of friends, drinking some good local wines,
and
we thought somebody needed to tell the story. So why not us as insiders and really starting out? We thought, well, let's do it. So we launched the magazine in 2011.
It's a good one too, folks.
Thanks. It's our goal is to educate both the consumer and our growing trade. Mm-hmm. Ramona is a fairly new wine region. There's around 81 vineyards in Ramona right now.
Wow.
Like Mike said, more and more going in all the time. So we thought, well, there's a story here to tell. So we partnered with our friend Dave Billick, who has 30 years of publishing experience. And actually, the magazine was his idea. And we said, you know, you bring the publishing experience, we'll bring the vineyard and winery experience, and we're off and running. It's free online. It has the most up-to-date map of our region with 21 tasting rooms now up in and around Ramona.
So what's the email address to that so people can check it out?
Yeah, it's free online. It's www.ramonavalleywineregion.com. And I encourage your listeners to check it out and let us know what they think.
With the new micro-vineyard boutique winery ordinance passing, what can your guests expect, you know, when they come out to see you guys?
They can expect to meet the winemaker. This is the owners. And the joke around here is that Napa spills more wine than Ramona makes in a year. So it's very small, intimate.
So we also make extremely limited quantities. So usually only one barrel of each varietal. So when it's gone, it's gone. For our listeners, that's 24 cases of wine. So very small production.
Very nice.
And I use the analogy that boutique or artisan wines are similar to artisan breads that you might pick up at the farmer's market. Every batch is completely different. It's unique. It's made by hand. It's not mass produced. We don't use any machines in the making of our wines. So from the planting of the vines to the harvest and winemaking, we do everything by hand with extreme care to the quality. Great example is at our last harvest, we sorted 5,000 pounds of Sangiovese by hand, removing every shot berry or unripe berry, stems, leaves. We call it MOG, material other than grapes. You don't really want that in your wine at fermentation, and we're small enough to be able to sort through and pick every single one of those out.
Well, that's an awful lot of work for just two of you.
We round up all of our friends and we turn it into a party. So
yeah, absolutely.
Well, life's a party at the vineyard for sure. One last question before we close here. Where can our listeners come to experience your wines?
We're open on Saturdays from noon to sunset, and details are available at the Ramona Valley Wine Region magazine or on our website, ramonaranch.net. We also are open on the occasional Sunday, although Mike and I still have full-time jobs during the week, so we try and take Sundays off, but we will open up on occasion or for private parties or by appointment. So I invite anyone who's interested in wine and the experience to take the time to come up to Ramona Valley. Again, there are currently 21 tasting rooms, and any one of us that you stop in can help you plan a special day in the country. And we're really just 35 minutes up the hill from San Diego.
It's beautiful up here. Come up and visit our good friends up in Ramona and come and visit the wine region. Thanks so much for your time today. Hope everybody enjoyed meeting Michael and Terry.
Thanks, Greg, for coming up. We appreciate it.
You've been listening to Vines and Wines with Greg Maness, proprietor of the Maness Vineyards Estate. Visit the website at manisvineyards.com.
And Amera Media Production.
This is Leon Thompson with the Health Report. Whooping cough cases are on the rise in San Diego, and that's got health officials concerned. Last year, 2,072 cases of whooping cough, or pertussis, were confirmed in San Diego County. That's a new record, the county's Health and Human Services Agency reports. Statewide, over 11,000 cases were reported last year, and San Diego's rate of whooping cough is double the state rate. Six deaths have occurred in California in the past 2 years from whooping cough, which can cause serious complications, including pneumonia and bleeding behind the eyes into the brain. Wilma Wooten, County Public Health Officer, says whooping cough activity in our region has been high since 2013, adding, the epidemic appears to be continuing into 2015. So far this year, 157 cases have been confirmed in our county. Newborns are very susceptible to whooping cough because they are too young to be fully vaccinated. It is vital for pregnant women to be vaccinated in the third trimester to give protection to their unborn infants. 40 local cases required hospitalization in 2014, and 26 of those were babies less than 1 year old. A typical case of pertussis starts with a cough and runny nose for 1 to 2 weeks, followed by weeks to months of rapid coughing fits that sometimes end with a whooping sound. Fever, if present, is usually mild. Antibiotics can lessen the severity of symptoms and prevent the spread of the disease to others. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends the following vaccination schedule. Young children need 5 doses of the vaccine by kindergarten at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, 15 to 8 months, and 4 to 6 years. All students entering 7th grade need proof of whooping cough booster immunization. A booster is recommended for pregnant women during their third trimester of each pregnancy, even if they get a booster shot before becoming pregnant. 1 dose is recommended for adults 19 years of age and older who did not get Tdap as an adolescent. You can get the vaccine series and booster shot for yourself and your children through your primary care physician. Local pharmacies offer vaccinations for a fee, and anyone who is not covered by a medical insurance plan can get the shot from a county public health center at minimum or no cost. For more information about whooping cough and ongoing vaccination clinics, visit sdiz.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with some important news for hikers. Three Sisters Falls is one of the most beautiful natural attractions in East County, a trio of waterfalls and natural swimming holes in a wilderness area within Cleveland National Forest. But the falls are also among the most difficult scenic sites to access. Now, Cleveland National Forest's Palomar Ranger District is planning a major recreation management project at Three Sisters Falls, located near Boulder Creek Road between Santa Isabel and Descanso. The proposed action is to adopt and or construct a Level 2 system trail to Three Sisters Falls, as well as to decommission existing user-created trails and restore the habitat there, and to clear and construct a primitive dirt or gravel parking area off Boulder Creek Road, also adding a kiosk with educational materials. The purpose of this project is to address concerns related to public health and safety, resource impacts from unmanaged recreation use, and compromised access along Boulder Creek Road for area residents and emergency vehicles during high-use periods at Three Sisters Falls, says District Ranger Joan Friedlander. The user-created trails cross steep, rugged terrain and riparian areas. Last year, an average of 100 to 200 people a day used the trails to Three Sisters Falls, and that exceeded 400 people a day at peak periods. This has resulted in public health and safety issues, including heat illness, traumatic injuries resulting from hikers falling as they attempt to reach the falls, and lost hikers. There have also been problems with widespread soil erosion, watershed impacts, plant and wildlife harm, and impediments to traffic flow on Boulder Creek Road, including access for emergency vehicles and residents. While the U.S. Forest Service believes the proposed changes will improve safety, access, and environmental protections, a key issue is that improving access, ironically, could also increase the number of visitors to Three Sisters Falls. And that could necessitate a permit system that would restrict daily visitors, as was implemented after changes were made to trails leading to Cedar Creek Falls. A 30-day comment period issued by Cleveland National Forest is open now through March 25th for the Three Sisters Falls Recreation Management Project Environmental Assessment. A project description and a map are available online at the Forest Service website, or you can find those at the East County Magazine website in our top news section.
This is Ed Barreno with news about a recall of 4.6 million fire extinguishers sold at Home Depot, Walmart, and other major stores. The disposable extinguishers are made by the Kidd Company, spelled K-I-D-D-E, which has received 11 reports of the recalled fire extinguishers failing to discharge. When a fire breaks out is not the time to find out your fire extinguisher is not working, but that's exactly what could happen due to faulty plastic valves on these extinguishers. The faulty products were sold at major home hardware and department stores nationwide, as well as online from August 2013 through November 2014, according to the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. Consumers are advised to immediately contact Kidd for a replacement fire extinguisher by calling the company's toll-free number at 855-283-7991 or visit Kidd.com and click on Safety Notice for more information.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians. San Diego County Treasurer Tax Collector Dan McAllister has announced that the county will be auctioning off 324 local properties on March 24th. The registration to bid on these properties is now open. The lowest minimum bid will start at $1,200, and the highest is currently set to start at over $1.9 million. Minimum bids are set based on the total amount of back taxes, penalties, and sales costs. The auction is conducted annually in an effort to collect unpaid taxes on properties that have been in tax default for at least 5 years. A listing of all properties to be auctioned and instructions to register for the event can be found at sdtreztax.com. That's sdtreztax.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes an art reception and live music, including a concert at a winery and a famous Calypso star.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including St. Patrick's Day weekend and Easter egg hunts, Vallecitos Day historical reenactments, and Tomato Mania.
Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine. Singer-songwriter Billy Ocean will perform on March 5th at the Sequan Live and Up Close Theater in El Cajon. Britain's top black recording star of all time has sold over 30 million records in styles ranging from calypso to R&B. He's won a Grammy and topped the pop charts in the U.S. and several other countries. For more information, you can visit Sequan.com.
The Pastel Society of San Diego, Art in the Park, an exhibition of fine art by 10 members of the Pastel Society of San Diego will be on display now through March 27th at Mission Trails Regional Parks Visitor Center. An artist reception will be held on Saturday, March 7th from 1 until 4 p.m. For details, see mtrp.org.
The Waits, an acoustic mandolin and guitar duo, will perform at San Pasqual Winery's Tasting Room in the La Mesa Downtown Village starting at 7 p.m. on Saturday, March 7th. The Waits blend folk, bluegrass, country, classic rock, and more as they sing and play in harmony. Wine is available by the glass. Cheese and crackers and dessert is also available for purchase. For more information, visit sanpasqualwinery.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions, the Stagecoach Theater at Grossmont College will present Romeo and Juliet with 8 performances in March, starting March 13th and running through March 21st. Based on Shakespeare's classic tragic romance, this production has a twist. set against the turbulent backdrop of Prohibition-era Chicago, blending a mafia family drama with the timelessness of forbidden love. For tickets, contact the Theater Arts Department at Grossmont College at grossmont.edu.
Tomato Mania, the world's largest heirloom tomato seedling sale, is coming to Cuyamaca College on March 14th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This event showcases perhaps the most drought-tolerant vegetable of all with a collection of heirloom and hybrid tomatoes. You can learn how to grow perfect tomatoes in two classes offered at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. In addition, author Scott Degree, author of Tomato Mania, will be on hand signing copies of his book. Admission to the Tomato Mania plant sale event is free, though there is a nominal fee for presentations. For more information, visit tomatomania.com.
St. Patrick's Day weekend festivities in East County are slated for Sunday, March 15th in downtown El Cajon on Main Street and Magnolia. Choose from a half marathon, a 5K run, or a green mile competition to compete for large cash prize pot, medals, and free drinks after the race at the St. Patrick's Beer and Wine Festival. There's also a leprechaun challenge for racers dressed like leprechauns vying to win a costume contest. For full details, visit stpatricksdayhalf.com.
Desert Artwork will be on display at the Circle of Art show in Borrego Springs on March 14th and 15th. This juried art show will include paintings, sculptures, weavings, jewelry, and photography. For details, visit circleofart.org.
Take a trip back in time to life on the 1860s frontier during Vallecitos Day on Saturday, March 28th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Vallecitos County Park. This year's event focuses on cattle drives and cattle ranching along the Southern Overland Trail with cattle ranching demonstrations as well as the arrival of trail riders on horseback. You can also visit with pioneer men and women in period attire, visit a mountain man camp, and hear historical talks, as well as experiencing frontier equipment, crafts, and firearms. Visitors will be encouraged to dress in frontier attire. Be sure to bring a picnic lunch since there is no food at the site. Vallecitos County Park is located in the Anza Borrego Desert on County Route S2 at mile marker 34 and 35. For information, visit sdparks.org.
The Ramona Music Fest will be held March 28th in Ramona, featuring emerging talent and popular San Diego musicians playing everything from rock to reggae and from country to Americana. This all-day outdoor event benefits the Ramona Rotary and Kiwanis Clubs. The festival will be held at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center, also known as the Rodeo Fairgrounds, at the northeast end of downtown Ramona. For details, visit ramonamusicfest.org.
The Easter Bunny train will be rolling out of the Campo Depot at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum on March 28th and 29th and on April 4th. The annual family event includes a ride aboard the vintage train on an Easter egg hunt. For details, visit psrm.org.
Santee Lakes invites the public to its annual extravaganza on April 4th. This community event features continuous egg hunts for children ages 8 and under, live entertainment, a petting zoo, pony rides, craft booths, and carnival rides brought to you by the City of Santee and the Padre Dam Municipal Water District. For full details, hop on over to www.santeelakes.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Welcome. This is Mimi Pollack, host of East County Magazine's Animal Tales. Kumbali looked at us with soulful amber eyes.
Those of us present were struck by the magnificence of the cheetah, the star attraction at a benefit event for the Cheetah Conservation Fund at the Ramona home of well-known wildlife photographer Roy Tuft and his wife Robin. The benefit honored Dr. Lori Marker, a wildlife researcher and one of the world's top experts on cheetahs, known as the Jane Goodall of the cheetah world. Dr. Lori, as she likes to be called, stopped here during her fall 2014 tour to talk about her work as founder and director of the Cheetah Conservation Fund in Namibia, Africa.
So our clan needs to grow if we're going to save the species. There's only 10,000 of them left in the wild. And that's not enough to grow that population. I set up the Cheetah Conservation Fund now, going on nearly 25 years ago. Next year will be our 25th year. I've worked with cheetahs for 40 years. Namibia is where I live, and that's where the last large remaining population of cheetahs come from.
There are only 10,000 cheetahs left in the wild, and Dr. Lori is determined to protect them. That's a daunting task since the vast majority of wild cheetahs are outside protected areas and poaching is rampant.
They've been revered for over 5,000 years by humans, and we've actually loved them to near extinction. We've thinned them out of the Asian population, right now illegal trade to Africa and east parts of Africa going into the Middle East is decimating the small populations that are there because we love them. But what we don't understand is loving them means saving them.
Dr. Lori founded the nonprofit conservation in 1990. Since that time, she has worked tirelessly to create a permanent conservation and research center for cheetahs in the wild. The Cheetah Conservation Fund has been working with African farmers to protect their livestock by breeding and introducing Anatolian shepherd dogs to effectively guard their herds from predators. The organization is concerned, too, with the land and habitat because much of Namibia is being invaded by Senegalia, a tough thorny bush that prevents the cheetahs from hunting and the livestock from grazing. Through her conservation program, Dr. Lori has created Bush Block, a fuel made from compressed Senegalia pellets. It is a clean-burning fuel that can provide home heating and cooking in regions where electricity is scarce. In addition, the Cheetah Conservation Fund maintains a cheetah sanctuary to rescue and raise orphan cheetahs, as well as a 4,000-acre game camp for soft-releasing cheetahs before reintroducing them into the wild. The Cheetah Conservation Fund also has programs in education, integration of livestock and wildlife management systems, habitat restoration, predator species conservation, and sustainable development of the Namibian economy.
Very arid, very, very, very arid. And so with that, you have to make sure that you manage your livestock with the amount of grass that's there, especially in arid droughts that are going on. And then with that, you've got to have a wildlife prey base. And a healthy ecosystem really revolves around an integrated system. Livestock, wildlife, and so what you end up with livestock is you have a monosystem. And you don't want that. You want to have an integrated system with livestock and wildlife. And Namibia has been one of the leading countries in the world that showed that wildlife can also have benefit for your grasslands, wildlife can have benefit for ecotourism, wildlife can have benefit for maintaining systems that are really important. Cattle on their own, goats and sheep, don't do that. And those are the big issues that when you're dealing with the poverty systems throughout Africa, you end up not being able to actually address some of those. And so you have to look at the poverty cycle, then look at the grass, then look at the potential for ecotourism, bringing in wildlife, managing your livestock. And so cheetahs, look at this animal. Is it going to go out and get a cow? It's going to catch a calf that might be under a month of age, and that's where 90% of losses might be. But our Namibian farmers have figured out that if they protect their calves under 1 month, they're not only going to protect their calves from cheetahs, but also from leopards, hyenas, and jackals. And so the programs that we've learned and taught and work with not only help save the cheetah, but they're helping all the other predators within the system. And our programs are also helping predators, wolves here in America, issues around jaguars, mountain lions.
All this takes funds, and twice a year, Dr. Lori goes on tour in the United States. She has been traveling throughout California, giving presentations, signing books, and raising money, as well as making known the plight of the cheetah. Dr. Lori is a remarkable and strong woman who has accomplished a lot in her 60 years. She is considered the world's foremost expert on cheetah biology. She holds a doctoral degree in zoology from the University of Oxford, but her career in wildlife conservation, particularly cheetahs, began in 1974 at an accredited zoological park called Wildlife Safari in Oregon, where she helped to develop a captive breeding program for cheetahs that came from the wild in Namibia. She became the cheetah curator there and later took a position at the Smithsonian Institution National Zoological Park in Washington, D.C., as the executive director of the zoo's New Opportunities and Animal Health Science Center, or NOAA Center, with which she still maintains ties. Like the biblical figure Noah himself, Dr. Lori envisions herself as a protector of animals and the habitat in Africa, although she says, there are not more prizes for predicting rain, only prizes for building the ark. Since 1990, she has dedicated herself to the conservation of the cheetah. She has also authored a book detailing her plans titled A Future for Cheetahs. She thinks she was chosen by the cheetah. She says, with my first look into their eyes, they captured me and brought me into their life, heart, and soul. After learning that cheetahs rarely bred in captivity and were being lost in the wild, she resolved to dedicate her efforts to saving the cheetah. It is easy to understand Dr. Lori's fascination with cheetahs. Gazing into the eyes of Kumbali, I was struck by her beauty and grace. Kumbali has been a magnificent ambassador for the San Diego Zoo for the past 13 years. Unfortunately, the cheetah is also Africa's most endangered cat, which is why Dr. Lori has been fighting so hard for their survival. You can learn more about efforts to save cheetahs and how you can help. You can visit the Cheetah Conservation Fund's website, cheetah.org.
Ancient treasures seized in seven U.S. cities, including San Diego, have been returned to the Italian government. Homeland Security offices, working with U.S. Customs and Border Patrol, conducted the investigations and returned 19 artifacts, including a 17th century cannon, 5th century Greek pottery, and ancient works of art. The artifacts were looted from their rightful Italian owners and smuggled into the United States during the last several years, according to Homeland Security. In July 2012, the department's San Diego office received information about four illegally excavated antiquities from clandestine sites in Pompeii owned by the Allen E. Paulson Trust. Homeland Security officers found and seized three frescoes dating back to the 1st century A.D. and one Askos pottery vessel dating back to the 4th century B.C. The trust forfeited the items to the U.S. government so that they could be returned to Italy. Additional seizures were made in New York, Boston, Buffalo, Baltimore, Miami, and San Francisco. Since 2007, Homeland Security has helped to return over 7,200 artifacts to 30 different countries. Members of the public who have information about suspected stolen cultural property are urged to call the toll-free tip line at 1-866-DHS-2-ICE. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.